Hello, guys, and welcome to the Albion Social with me, your host, Alfie, and my usual co-host, Ricky. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Feels good to be back. We've had a short little while off due to scheduling conflicts.
And my power decided not to turn off.
But we are back now. We've obviously missed a few games. Fortunately, they were very missable games, so we'll forget about those. And we'll go straight to our most recent game. A predictably fairly miserable trip to Staffordshire.
Always is.
Yeah, completely expected. What do you reckon, mate? 2-2 against Stoke.
It's not like, given the place in the league, it's one of them where you looked at the running, and if it wasn't Stoke, then you'd be like, "That you need to get 3 points there." And then when you go 2-0 up, I think you definitely think you need to get 3 points. But it's what it's like. It's, you can't say they didn't deserve it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. Obviously, they did. They look like they played out of skin. Obviously, it doesn't. I don't think they play like that every week. Whether they get a bit more fired up when the baggies are in town, who knows? You know what I mean? But yeah, they look like they had something to play for. It's a big point for them, really. They're obviously 4 points away from relegation now. It's a bad point for us in the context of Norwich won and Coventry won and Middlesbrough won and Hull won, I think. The table all of a sudden seems quite scary.
Yeah. I think my thing with that is every single team that's in the running is going to have weeks like that where everyone else wins and they lose. So I don't think there's too much reason to get emotional about it. We still got 3 points in between if Coventry win their game in hand. So
yeah, we've still got it. It's still in our hands. That's the thing. Obviously, it's frustrating for me because we had such a nice cushion, and obviously we've had a really good opportunity in the last three games to kind of solidify that. And we have passed it up. Obviously, I feel like a point away at Millwall is always a good point, especially against Neil Harris and his absolute sloggers. Fair play to him.
Yeah.
And Watford's a poor. It's a good point in the context, but it's a bad point to get at home against Watford.
Yeah.
And then this, it just feels a bit frustrating, but we'll take the point. Point is better than none, which at one stage I felt like we would get. But yeah, I thought we were pretty bad, man. I really did. I thought it was the defensive side of our game that really let us down.
Yeah, I think it's been quite rare that Bartley's had a bad game, hasn't it, this season, really? But he was bullied. Like, he kept getting, I think it is that Mame. I think that's how you say it. He had the run of him every time. When it was on his back, but he's taller by the looks of it, was holding him off. Got a few shots off in positions he should never have got shots off. It was that one that like nearly sort of trickled in when he had Bartley on his back.
Yeah.
Which is rare, but he is usually so commanding. But just weren't at it. I thought Kipre had a bad game as well.
Yeah.
I think that was more on the ball.
Yeah, it was a weird one factor. I think it was big for that in the first half was the wind. Because, I mean, the wind took the ball and really fooled our defence like three or four times.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, even outside of that, I thought they were both pretty poor. And I think it's natural. I think if Bartley has a bad game, Kipre is always going to have a bad game.
Yeah.
But Kipre benefits so much from having the commanding nature of Bartley next to him. And I think, to be honest, I think that was the root of our problems because we had no control over the game at all. But I still thought we was decent going forward.
Yeah.
And obviously we got that goal through Grady, being Grady.
Yeah.
And a really good finish from Johnston.
Yeah, it looks like they've got a bit of a connection going in it, because like, as soon as Grady started playing in the 10, you could see that he'd sort of been instructed to find Johnston. But before, he was mainly doing it where it was only going into his feet. But if he can start finding his runs in behind, then that's like an added threat that we haven't had in our team pretty much all season.
Yeah, and it feels a bit like, to me at the moment, and like I'd say the last couple games, our kind of, I don't know, what we're known for is being really good at the back and not amazing going forward, but we do enough.
Yeah.
It feels like that's flipped. It feels like we've got so many avenues to score.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, how good we've been defensively all season has just kind of left us.
Yeah. I do think, though, with what you're saying about with how many avenues we got to score, I think when the attack is Johnston, Dean Garner, Wallace, Asante, it does seem to me like everything goes through Johnston and we don't really have a plan outside of that. Because I think, like, well, I said before we started, didn't I? It didn't feel as if Wallace touched the ball in the first half.
Well, that's Wallace. Obviously, I think Wallace has been below par for a good while. Like we've discussed, I like Wallace through the middle. I think that's now his best position. Yeah. Whether that's off the striker or as a striker, I think it's the exact same. Nowadays, out wide, he doesn't look like he has any confidence for me.
No.
In terms of beating a man. He's not the best dribbler, but he's good at kind of finding that yard and getting a cross in. And he looks like he's lost that edge a little bit. And then...
Yeah, but that's what he was like at the start of the season, though.
Yeah.
And then he sort of picked up when he was moved back into the middle, and now it just, yeah. I think he's lost that yard to, like, sort of create the separation. And yeah. His crosses are just hitting the fullback now.
It's a bit frustrating because Wallace, I would say, will play because he's a captain, where you imagine you could play Fellows, Dean Garner and Johnston behind Asante and potentially Maja soon.
Yeah.
That is such an exciting front three. And that's where you'll get a lot of avenues to score. And I really like the balance that Johnston and Fellows have got, with Johnston kind of coming in and Fellows going on the outside.
Yeah.
There's a lot of variation there. Whereas
Maja really adds to that as well.
Yeah. Because Maja is... I feel like Maja is like what BTA is, but if he'd been a striker all his life, do you know what I mean?
I said, I think I said, like, you know, when Maja got injured and it was Asante playing like every single minute because he had to, it felt as if the system's built for Maja in like the way he drops deep and he's meant to play those like first time balls out wide and that. I think that's what Maja was really good at Bordeaux from what I watched.
Yeah. It's a shame for us and for Maja that he won't, I think I said this before actually, that he won't get a chance to really get going this season. Yeah. He'll have the chance to make an impact, obviously, because we've got, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that he'll be in the squad on Wednesday and at the very least Saturday. So he'll have the chance to make an impact, but he won't have no chance of kind of, like you say, with the system and it being kind of centred around him. It is a real shame that we'll have had a full season of Maja and only seen a fraction of what he can do, really.
Yeah, I think it's just a bit gutting, but I think obviously he doesn't have the chance, you know, to really show us like what he can do.
No.
But for the rest of the season and whenever he does come back, whether that's with four games or two, what he can do is make himself a hero, because we need summit at the moment, because it's three draws in a row. Mm-hmm. So we need just summit else added.
Yeah. Which is, it's a bit frustrating because we've had that something else added with Johnston and Fellows.
Yeah.
And now it feels like we need another gear up. And so when you're going to run out of gears eventually. Yeah. That's the thing. One thing from the Stoke game, and I think that the two games previous, I think Mowat and Yakushlu, I think they're tired, man. I really think they're fatigued. I feel like there's been so many, there's been gaps in the midfield, and I think there's been a big gap between the defence and the midfield.
Yeah, I first thought that, what was it? Just look at our games. Bristol. I thought that even though we won, I thought there was space and you could see it, and a better team would have took advantage of it.
So yeah, I really noticed it at Millwall and then Watford. Against Watford, just to kind of go off, not off topic because we're talking about it, but Watford, it felt like Watford kept getting round our fullbacks, and then there was space on the edge of the box every single time. And you're thinking, like, where are the midfielders? And I fought it a few times against Stoke. Obviously not in that position because Stoke didn't really get into those. But kind of when we've been turned around and then kind of it's kind of out wide from a goal kick or something. And then it felt like there was a massive gap between the centre-halves and the midfielders.
Yeah, well, that's where the Stoke first goal sort of came from, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The thing you were talking about in the wide areas, because obviously he's cut inside and then Yakuzlu's having to sprint in instead of already being there.
Yeah.
And that's how he gets done.
I don't know why. I can't really put a finger on why it's dropped off so much, because obviously Yakushlu and Mota have easily been the best part of our season.
Yeah.
Their partnership has been top quality. Yeah. I always feel like when Yakushlu is below par, it's because he's got a bit of an injury.
Mm.
And I don't know. I feel like they're both just a bit fatigued.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, and obviously we talk about how good Johnston Fellows have been, but when they're both in the team, neither of them really cover as much, so there's more distance for Mowat and Yakuzlu to cover than probably most other midfielders in the league.
Yeah.
So whereas they're only getting, you know, a little bit tired, then they get the chance to recover. That's like doubled for them because they're having to cover so much ground. And obviously they're asked to join in the press as well and get on to the other team's midfielders. So they're literally covering like so much ground all throughout the game. And Yakuzlu's never been the fittest anyway. Remember last season he always had to be took off at 60 minutes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Chalobah's been injured as well, hasn't he?
He was on the bench, I think.
What was it?
Against Stoke. I can't remember him playing. Yeah. No, he ain't played for a good while. His last appearance was at QPR. He's been on the bench every game, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but if Corbin don't trust him, then this is a thing for me. In a running, you've got to rotate your squad. Regardless of how the drop-off in quality is, you've got to rotate or you get injuries. And if he's stopped trusting him, and that's why he had to bring in Mvia, then that's 90 minutes in the legs for Mowat and Yakuzlu most weeks. And that's not going to do him any good either.
Yeah. The thing with that whole thing is clearly, all of a sudden, Carlos has decided he likes Reach in centre mid. Now, obviously, Reach came on against Watford with Mvia, and I thought it was the right change to make, and I thought they both did really well, to be honest. But it's really random, just on the complete base of it. And I wonder what's happened with Chalobah. Obviously, like, no one has been the biggest fan of Chalobah anyway. But
it did feel like he was in the best run of form he's been in since he joined. It felt like we'd, because before when Chalobah came on, we'd concede like every week. Every single time he subbed on, it felt like we conceded. And it felt like that had stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's an odd one though, because I feel Chalobah, he's kind of snuck out the back door a bit because no one was his biggest fan. So when he's not playing, no one notices it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a bit of an odd one, man. I mean, what I'd say is Yakushlu and Mowat need to be rested.
Yeah.
They need a game off against Rotherham. Maybe that's the game to kind of say to Chalobah, here's your chance next to Envia. Obviously, because Envia is there now, Chalobah can play in his more natural position, a little bit further forward.
Yeah.
Kind of doing the fancy little things that he can do.
Hope as well that a midfielder Chalobah and Envia is good enough to beat a Rotherham team with nothing to play for.
Well, I was having that discussion today about obviously resting and rotating players. And obviously, I feel like we need to win against Rotherham just because they are awful. And then you think about what you'd rotate. And I'm kind of of the thought where I'd go Semi at right back.
Yeah.
I'd put Peters in for Bartley, give him a rest. Maybe put Reach in for Townsend. I feel like that's a bit too Carabao Cuppy.
Yeah.
Then I'd definitely rest those two and put Chalobah and Envia. And then I'm thinking Phillips on the left, give him 90 minutes. And then like my mate was like, oh, but, you know, you can't be too complacent. But that team should absolutely beat Rotherham.
If you can't afford to rotate players as well, you don't deserve to be promoted. Because all you're going to do is run your players into the ground and fall off. So you have to be able to trust your squad.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Anyway, we got a bit of a tangent there. Back to the Potteries, unfortunately. Yeah, obviously 1-0 up, and then we got that second goal. Feels like we went 2-0 up generally on against the run of play.
Yeah.
Really good play by BTA. Wallace adjusted his feet quite well, got the finish away. From there, I thought, well, it's done and dusted, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
No, but we don't concede many goals.
I feel like after that, obviously, we scored, what time did we score? 57, and they equalised on 68. So it's just such a short turnaround.
Yeah.
It felt like we just kind of... See, I don't like to say we backed off, because I don't think we ever back off before the opposition makes us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think it's something we do on purpose.
No.
I've always said that.
I think Stoke just kind of got a bit of a foothold, and we just, I don't know, it feels like we just kind of shirk a bit and kind of shrink into our shape, and then when that shape gets dribbled through that easily, like Manhoof did.
Yeah. That seems to be something we're struggling a lot with at the moment, like people dribbling. We just don't seem to be able to tackle them. Obviously, mainly comes down from our fullbacks not being very good at defending, but...
Yeah.
I think that, what I said about Townsend, Johnston... Moat being a bad three on the ground, because none of them do really like to make tackles.
No, yeah, it's a weird one. And obviously that the goal has come from that side. And I don't know what... It's hard to put a nail on the remedy for that, do you know what I mean? Apart from the players just kind of booking it up, like those three players.
Yeah.
So I think it is just like, for me, I've always liked Townsend. I've always been a supporter of Townsend and a defender of Townsend. But for me, and I said this months ago, I think he's way past his physical peak. Yeah. I don't think he's physically anywhere near good enough for what Carlos wants to do.
Yeah.
I think he's more than adept as a championship left back, to be honest.
Yeah.
I just think the physical demands that we need from a left back, he's just not got anymore. And I feel like that's probably shown every week.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was never the fastest as well, was he? In like when we signed him, and then it was always sort of said if he was a bit more athletic, he'd probably be playing in the Prem. I don't really agree with that, but that's what some people said about him.
I've always felt like he is a good Championship left back.
Yeah.
Like I say, I just feel like you say, he was never the fastest, he was never the strongest. But I feel like even so, he's really declined.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's 30, 31, 31. Just turned 31. So it's an early, you know, it's quite early to be kind of going that much downhill. But I really think he's probably, I'd even say like nearing the end. I think he could get quite easily a decent Championship side that aren't quite as robust as us, I suppose. And quite easily make a 3, 4, 5 more years out of it. But like I say, I just feel like he's not up to the physical demands that we need.
Yeah. And with what you were saying about it's an early decline, it doesn't help when you're asked to play 40-plus games of, like, super intense football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. It's true, and it might just be a fact that he's maybe a bit fatigued.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, he didn't play much at the start of the season, did he?
He's not.
He might. Yeah, he came on a few times, but it was Peter's left centre back and Phillips left wing back, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
For a fair while. So it's not like he's been flat out. Do you know what I mean? So no. I don't know. But then I feel like
he still started 29.
Yeah. It wasn't long before we kind of went back to that four, though, was it?
No.
I feel like it's a weird kind of potion that we've got over there with Mowat's similar to Townsend. Well, obviously, Mowat is pretty terrible physically. Yeah. Apart from really, he's got a good engine, but he's incredibly slow, as we know. Obviously, not the strongest. So you haven't quite got the recovery there.
No.
And then Johnston, I think he's liable to not switching off, just not being aware of his defensive responsibilities.
Yeah.
While also, I'm not going to, he tries, but I just don't think he's got that awareness.
Yeah. I think the thing is as well, tactics are like decided by what your players want to do, innit? It's what your attackers want to do mainly. So, because Johnston wants to play so high and be so direct, and we want to press so high, then Townsend's probably got to step up and Moat's got to step up like another 10 yards, like while we've got the ball, so they can stay close to each other. And then that exposes their physical weaknesses.
Yeah.
Whereas when we have Grady, you know, he doesn't go as high and wide, does he? He usually drifts inside a bit. And that means that they can sort of stay a bit deeper or move into different positions.
Yeah. So, I don't know I don't think there really is a remedy to it. I think there's probably like a tactical remedy where you shift the player over, try and get MJ to kind of be more alive to it, stuff like that. But yeah, I think it was a poor goal to concede that first goal.
Yeah.
Just felt like it felt like it happened a few times where they just kind of drifted through us.
Yeah.
Knife through butter kind of thing, and it's like it's really frustrating, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think you should ever be getting a shot off when there's that many bodies around you.
It's not like he's dribbled in a tricky fashion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just kind of ran in a bit of a straight line, a little bit of a jink.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because then it felt like Stoke really had a bit of momentum, which they had anyway because they looked like the better team. But then I feel like we shored it up a bit.
Yeah.
And then Envier thinks he's Karate Kid. What is going on there? I don't know.
It's one of it. You can't even analyse that because you're like... Just what are you doing?
I just, yeah, like, I can't see what he's trying to do. It's like a last-ditch thing. So the only thing I can say is he's not aware that Kipre is directly behind Vidigal or whoever it was. So he's going, oh, I've got to get to this. But, you know, do you know what I mean? And,
yeah. I think it's because he knows that he was the one who lost the ball. And then he knows that he was caught out of position slightly on the ball over the top. So he was just desperately trying to make up for a couple of mistakes.
Bit of hero ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like with Envia, like I said to you before, I think he's liable to erratic moments. And you can tell that just in small actions that he does.
Yeah.
Like massively overhit passes to people's feet and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, calm yourself down, son. Do you know what I mean? Just come on, do your job. Pass it to someone who's better at passing.
Yeah.
And crack on. And I feel like you can tell just from those bits. And I thought it before he actually did that. I thought he's really erratic and he's got that, like, he's got like a bozo gene about him. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I watched a bit of him while he was at Olympiacos, like when I found out that we were meant to be signing him. And it's like, it's a weird one, because if Corbrand actually like properly rated him, you'd expect Corbrand to have tried to sign him a lot earlier. But he was like, all right, I've worked with you for, I mean, I know it weren't long, it was like 12 games Corbrand had at Olympiacos. But he's worked with him, he knows what he's about, and he didn't really want to bring him in until there was no other option.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's just the nature of it. There's no doubting that he was and he's the last option.
Yeah.
What I will say is I think he is a good... If he didn't have that streak about him, that erratic streak, he'd be as sound as a pound to come on and replace Shikushlu for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which he was against Watford. He did more than the job. Do you know what I mean? He was great.
But I know, talking about that problem with the left side, maybe Envia's the solution, and you end up having to drop Moat just to accommodate Johnston, because obviously he is a better tackler. But you don't really want to do that because of the season Moat's had.
Yeah, that'd be a ballsy decision.
Yeah, I know.
To say the least. Put Ricci in there, mate. But yeah, they scored the penalty. No, they didn't score the penalty. Vidigal missed it. Palmer saved it. Terrible penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Awful penalty. Followed it up, standard. But then it annoyed me, and this is what annoys me about the subs. Because obviously that was, the 78th minute. He brings on Phillips straight away. It's like... We should have, to me, attack is the best form of defence. Now, it's easy for, you know, me to sit here and say that because it's not real to me. It is real to me, but I'm not the one managing it. So I haven't got the consequence if that goes wrong. But I think it proved it in that fifth, it was about 15 minutes when it after from the 18th minute.
Yeah.
Where it felt like we got the foothold back and we pushed out back a bit. And we was creating a few chances because in the 87th minute, he changed. He put Reach back in the middle and put an actual winger on. Wide in Fellows.
I think that's I didn't realise it was that late. I think that's like a mental decision to leave Fellows that late.
Yeah. I'm not sure what his game is with Fellows. I think I know what it is because it's similar to like Pep with Foden, and it's pure patience and not rushing him and stuff like that, which is fair enough. But I feel like you look at it on a game-to-game basis and you think, well, Fellows could impact this game.
As well, it's different for Man City because obviously they're Man City.
They've got the luxury, haven't they?
Yeah, if they finish second a season, you know, they don't want to finish second, but it's not the end of the world. Whereas, like, if we don't get promoted, then it's another season in the Championship. Mm. So, and you never know, like, the teams The teams coming down, Burnley absolutely walked the league last time they were here. And then it's looking like Everton might come down, who would also walk the league.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like...
Oh, God.
It's like, yeah, we've not got the luxury to wait.
No, yeah, I agree. I think that's... Like, obviously, it's an extreme example, isn't it? But I think that's what he's going for, just the nurturing.
Yeah.
And I think, I always think it's the right way to go about it, because I think, obviously, like, say that extreme example with Foden and Pep. Pep came under a lot of stick, really, when he wasn't really playing Foden, but everyone thought he was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And then you think how it turns out, obviously, I don't know, man. I don't know. But like I say, it's like when you look at it kind of like in the context of this one game.
Yeah.
Fellows should have come on.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I think earlier.
Like, obviously, when you're managing a championship club, it isn't, you don't do stuff to the same extremes that the elite teams do, because you haven't got the extreme amounts of money. So you manage Fellows' minutes. You don't expect him, you know, you don't run him into the ground, but he can afford to come on the 80th when Phillips comes on. Yeah. You don't need to wait the other 7 minutes.
Yeah. And then it's like, I don't know, man. Because you end up, obviously, with the first round of subs and Reach comes on for Johnston, you end up with Reach, Dean Garner and Wallace behind BTA.
Yeah.
What are we trying to succeed with that?
Yeah. All our play as well comes from wide areas. So we left ourselves with the way of getting out our half being Adam Reach and Jed Wallace.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't... That's why I said to you before we started, what do you make of that? Because I don't understand. I think it really put us on a back foot, putting Reach on the wing. And now that isn't me saying, oh, Reach, you crap, man. Oh, bloody blah. Because I think he's, when he comes on and stuff, he does a job, to be honest. But it's, like I say, it felt counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of shoring up that left side.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's fine to shore up the left side. And we were talking about earlier, weren't we, how we don't intentionally sit in. But when you leave yourself with no outlets on the pitch, you're forced to.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's, like I say, that's, it frustrates. Carlos' subs have always frustrated me a little bit. Sometimes I turn out to be like, oh, okay, fair enough. Sometimes you do sit there and think, geez, man. This, like I say, it just feels a bit counterintuitive to me. And like you say about bringing Fellows on, why not just bring Fellows on for Wallace and kind of say, right, we're going to try and get the ball more and run at you a bit more, rather than saying, oh, Richie can get back. Really, I mean, Adam Reach isn't the best defender in the world. No. Do you know what I mean? It's not like we're bringing Cannavaro on left wing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. But we, like I said, like I was saying, it felt like we then, after their goal, kind of got that foothold back. Fellows come on, he made like three really promising situations.
Yeah.
All three were cutbacks. But there was no one there. It was really annoying. The second one really annoyed me because he beat his man so well, cuts it back, and it's like it's just Wyman in the box.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only player I'll absolve of that is Grady, because he was linking up with Fellows on, you know, out wide. But then where is everyone else? I don't. It's kind of futile, your winger making them runs, because there's no one in the box.
Yeah, exactly.
That arriver.
Yeah. Johnston's really good at that, isn't he?
Yeah. Right. But, is that dinner?
I've already had mine, actually. So.
But,
Johnston arrives, and I think when Johnston's on the pitch, it gives Dean Garner more space to arrive. But when you got Reach, he just sort of doesn't really know what to do when the ball goes in the attacking half.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Yeah. All in all, frustrating one, man. Really, I was fuming after the game, if I'm honest, because you 2-0 up and you throw it away like that.
Yeah.
It really, really annoyed me. Obviously, you take a breath. If Leeds can lose and if Ipswich can lose, West Brom can draw away at Stoke. Do you know what I mean? The only thing is you need to stop the rot. 3 draws in a row. Obviously, the last 2 kind of got out of jail a little bit because the other teams haven't took full advantage.
Yeah.
But then this weekend, all the teams took advantage and then the gap closes. You get a bit of a squeaky bum.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, maybe it will help us kind of keep that level up till the end of the season, like we were saying on our special episode about if you're on the beach for 3 or 4 games, you're not going into the playoffs in a good position, are you?
No.
If you've secured it early. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
But we've got a decent chance to book the Trent on Wednesday against a pretty horrible Rotherham side. Can't be too far off one of the worst championship sides ever.
Yeah, Rotherham's think 23 points, 41 games in. It's horrid.
It is terrible. It is absolutely terrible.
19 points off 24.
I think, I was going to say we could relegate them, but they're relegated at the moment. Yeah. 4 wins in a season, man.
Yeah, it's awful. To be relegated in early April. Like.
Oh. Good news. Hugill's injured. Yes. Usually I'd say advantage Rotherham, but.
Yeah.
Hugill was, absolutely bound to score against us. I mean, we should beat Rotherham.
Yeah, you don't.
I feel like there's not a lot to be said because there's not a lot of analysis or kind of breaking down that you can do with Rotherham because they're just a terrible side.
Yeah. I think my only thing would be earlier you said Peters and with their strikers, I think Sam Noam, it's in centimetres on top mob. He's 180 centimetres. Charlie White's 175. I think that's like roughly about 6'2", 6'3".
No, 180 is about 6 foot.
Is it?
Yeah.
I always thought that Sam Noam was massive.
Foot mob can be very wrong, though.
Well, to be fair, usually I wouldn't like look on an app for a height because they are always wrong. But Peters gets absolutely bullied every single time he's against a striker that can jump and run. And I think both of them can do that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But I think it again goes back to the idea that it's good enough to beat Rotherham. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, it's there and you're right, but they shouldn't be good enough to do that to Peters anyway.
Yeah. I just think I'd go either one of Bartley or Kipre and Ajoyi and just give one a rest and then maybe sub the other one off at half time.
Yeah. I definitely think the bottom line is you definitely need to be saving some legs in this game. I would have liked, that's why I'd like to have gave Furlong a rest. Because I feel like Furlong's got to have played most of our games.
I think Furlong might have actually played like every minute.
He's played, he was started on the bench against Coventry, didn't he? Because Pippa played.
Started 39 out of 41 matches.
Yeah.
3,487 minutes.
And he's up and down.
Mm.
And he's chasing backwards a lot because of his positioning.
Yeah.
So I feel like it would be nice to get him a rest. And that's why I'd like to see Semi right back anyway. Just for the experiment. See what the crack is. But maybe you go 2 or 3 at the back.
Yeah. I can't imagine that would go down well, though.
It'd go down well with true football fans like me and you, Ricky.
I think that's one that gets, if we aren't winning at half time, hear a few boos.
But no, I definitely think some legs have got to be saved. And like you say, if that's a matter of bringing players off at half time, so be it. As long as, I think Bartley really needs a rest. I think that's why you found that he kind of got bullied against Stoke.
Yeah.
I think, again, same as your Kushner and Mark, you're seeing a bit of fatigue, man. I really do.
Yeah.
So that, I'd say those three for me. And Johnston, although I don't think Johnston needs resting as such, because he's absolutely full of energy.
Yeah, he always does seem to get subbed off as well quite early.
Yeah. So, but I'd like to see Phillips get a good 60, 70, 80 minutes.
Yeah.
If, like we said earlier, is he ready? If he's ready, because he's looked so rusty.
Yeah.
I feel like you need to be looking at giving him a good 50, 60, 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Get some good minutes in the legs. And then in turn, you can chuck Fellows on the right, and then that balance comes back.
Yeah.
In terms of Phillips is more conservative.
Yeah.
And Fellows can do what he likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Balance the team up a bit.
Yeah. And then, like I said, I would like to see Envia and Chalobah all reach in centre mid, because that pairing, Chalobah and Envia, is and should be quite easily good enough to control the midfield against Klukas, Rinomota and Rathbone.
Still there midfield.
Yeah. I used to quite like Rinomota.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was a bad player at Reading.
Yeah.
But he's been kind of crap since that. And Klukas is also... Klukas is 33, apparently.
And Cafu.
Yeah, Cafu. Who, what? Lee Pelch?
No, Cafu. On the bench.
I thought you was actually on about Lee Pelch, your mate.
No.
True player. Cafu, number 7, man. Don't want him coming on. Jesus.
I remember him being in the Forest.
We've got Tom Eaves as well. Oh, my God. So they have... Oh, my God. They have Hugo and Tom Eaves.
That'd be a horrible, horrible front two to play against. And you wouldn't have to worry about anything behind you, but...
Yeah, me in front here. You got some. Yeah, they got as well. They got obviously Johansson is one of the best in the Championship. They say, I think.
Yeah, he had a good game against Plymouth.
Yeah, I think he's a good goalkeeper. But they've got, I don't know if you remember, Dylan Phillips on the bench, and he had a really good season at Charlton.
Keeper, yeah.
Yeah, he had a really good season, and he's just. You move and you don't get no minutes. It's kind of peaking it, really. But,
yeah.
You know. But yeah, I don't feel like I said, I don't feel like there's a lot of analysis and thinking to do about the Rotherham game, other than we absolutely have to beat them.
And they've got nothing to play for as well.
No, that usually works in the opposite way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if we're coming away with less than 3 points, I think it's a massive disappointment, whatever.
Panic stations as well.
Yeah. Serious, wet the bedtime kind of thing. But we've got to beat him. And then we don't go to Sunderland, come to us on Saturday. I feel like it's a similar proposition. Not in the fact that Sunderland are a very, very long way better than Rotherham.
Yeah.
But Sunderland are just out of sorts, aren't they? They've just drifted into, wow, They lost 6 games in a row not long back. Jesus
Christ. Was that under McBeal?
I don't think so, you know.
Something?
Yeah, it was. Most of them was. Yeah. Super Mick. Mick Beale only had 2. Mike Dodds lost the other 4. Fucking hell.
That was a proper weird one, that, because his only ever professional management job is Sunderland interim.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on at Sunderland. Obviously, they sacked Mowbray this season, didn't they?
Yeah.
That feels like a long, long time ago. Yeah. But that has got to be next to Blue sacking Eustace.
Yeah.
Got to be one of the worst decisions.
Yeah. I don't even think it's necessarily sacking Mowbray. That's like the bad. But Mick Beale.
Mick Beale, mate. Mick Beale, I could sit here all day and talk about Michael Beale and how terrible he is, because I like to follow Rangers, and obviously he stunk the place up at Rangers, and the signings he made, Jesus Christ, man. He actually played without wingers, like it's like 4-2-3-1 on FIFA. Like 3 cams. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was, and he sold, he like got rid of the wingers as well.
Yeah.
So it was,
and
like,
that might be what he did at Sunderland, you know?
Man.
Oh, yeah, because at QPR when he was playing, what's his name? Aerobinum, the one who was at us. He was playing him as like a 10. Just loads of other midfielders. And he proper, I think he like proper killed off Chris Willett's career there. And he was like obviously their best player.
Yeah. Yeah. Mate, he's a disease. He's a disease. He's terrible. Obviously, it's a shame he's not still there. Dodds seemed to have stabilised the form a little bit since that 6-game loss streak. They've drawn, won, lost and drawn.
I think as well, Dodds is getting the most out of Bellingham.
Yeah, because I noticed that.
There was a thing, Dodds was the Bellingham's youth coach at Blues. And yeah. I reckon that's why they've given him the interim for this season.
Yeah.
And Bellingham has come because he didn't really start the season off too well, but I think now they're playing him up front.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
He's been scoring a few goals. Obviously, Jack Clark is really good.
And I love that saying.
Yeah.
They're playing that Chris Rigg, 16.
Is he actually any good?
I don't know. He's only started 4 games. I've always quite liked Sunderland's team, the young team. I think Patterson's a decent goalkeeper. I really don't like O'Nine or Ballard.
I don't think O'Nine's any good. I think Ballard's a decent centre back. I just don't like him because he was there like celebrating injury manager pretty much.
Yes. And then Ekwa and Neil, I think they're both really good centre midfielders. I really like Dan Neil since he first kind of came out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I think he's a real, real nice centre mid. And then Ekwa has been highly, highly lauded since he came in.
I don't get it. Like, every time I've watched him, I haven't thought he's anything special. But everyone seems to absolutely love him.
Yeah, that's similar with me, where it's like you kind of get that. You just think he's good because everyone else says he's good, and then you kind of see it and you think, oh, but
I think he just takes like 1,000 long shots a game. That's just all. That's all I seem to see from him, just shooting from range and pinging passes.
I don't know, man, but it's supposed to be good. I think the thing I like about Ekwa is he's young.
Yeah,
he seems to be a decent enough player generally. And obviously that was Sunderland's big thing when it obviously promoting the youth and stuff like that, and they've got a really young team still.
Yeah.
Obviously headed by Job Bellingham, who I was going to say before you said about him getting better, though I thought he's had a poor season. Relatively, of course, because he's 18 and he's very young and all this, that and the other.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I find that harsh.
because he's 80. He's a baby,
and he's played 40 games, but they ain't all been up front.
Yeah,
he was playing deep, weren't he? He was playing really deep though, so that's why he ain't really got like the goal contributions and that.
Yeah, what I'll add to what I said, I don't think he's had a good season compared relative to what people have said about him.
Yeah,
because it was kind of similar to the Equa thing where you always hear about him, and obviously you kind of just automatically think Joel Bellingham is a good footballer.
Yeah,
because he's Jude's brother. And then kind of, I don't know, I just kind of, you know, you look at his stats and stuff and you think, well, he hasn't been that good. He looks like he's had a decent enough season.
Yeah,
it's
a good debut season in professional football, isn't it? But I don't think it's anything more than that, and that's how people have been getting on.
That is what I tried to say. Yeah. Well done. It's probably similar to what Jude did in terms of his first season or so at Birmingham.
Yeah.
Was good but not amazing.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's yet to be seen whether Joel Bellingham is as good as his brother. But he doesn't have to be. I think that's the big thing. He doesn't have to be because Jude Bellingham's like the best player ever. So, what do you think? Do you think Joel is a striker?
I think so. But genuinely, the only reason I think so is because that Mike Dodds, like every single time there's an interview, and every time Jude speaks about him, be like, oh yeah, he's a pure finisher, like around the box, like there's not, he's better than me. That's what Jude always says.
Jesus.
So, but for that reason, I think it's a striker. But honestly, I ain't watched enough of him to actually
say. No, I think, I don't know, man. Like you say, I've not really watched massive amounts of him. One thing I'll say about him was, I couldn't believe it. He's massive, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't
know. He's about 6'4".
Yeah, I don't know what is going on in that family.
Some magic balls on that dad. It's mental, to be honest. Like I said, I was, because Jude's quite tall. Jude's like 6'1", 6'2", but Jude's like wide now.
Yeah.
Whereas Job is like, he's got to be about 6'4".
Yeah.
But he's like, he's a little bit lankier.
Yeah, I think he's just got to grow into it, hasn't he?
Yeah, Jude did that.
I am older than Joe Bellingham, so. it's meant.
Well done. You've got a few more years to come with that.
Yeah.
Just wait. I was 8 years old when Joe Bellingham was born. And I'm going to see him play against my club on Saturday.
Yeah.
Truly depressing. Truly depressing. Well, just on that, I saw Fabrizio said something about a youngster, and he was born in 2009.
He's 15. Oh, no, he could, but is that the 14-year-old, the one that City have signed?
I can't remember. Yeah, I think it's City.
I find that so odd.
It is pretty mad, isn't it? Like, but
I don't think that should happen, man.
You've got to understand that I started high school in 2009.
That's mental.
If the viewers could see the camera, they would see the bags under my eyes. But nah, it's mad. And obviously, Job is, I don't know, I feel like there's kind of like, what I was trying to get at is, I feel like there's an expectation of Job and kind of an automatic assumption that he's good. I'm not saying that's not true. I'm not saying, I think relative to what has been said about him, he's not had the best of seasons.
Yeah, I think it's fair on him as well, the expectation that, and I think you can sort of tell that it does weigh on him a bit, because he has Job on the back of his shirt, doesn't he, instead of Bellingham, because he wants to separate himself from his brother's name. It's like, you can tell, if that's already happening on his first season, how's it going to be in 3 years' time?
Yeah, it's pretty mad, isn't it? I mean, you couldn't imagine playing under that pressure, because you'd be so happy for your brother, but all that be in your mind is, I've got to be as good as that.
Yeah.
And like, no matter what anyone says, that would absolutely be all that you would be thinking. I've got to be as good as that. And obviously Jude is and has been one of the best players in the world this season.
It's going to be up for a Ballon d'Or.
It must be hard, man.
Yeah.
So fair play to it. Like I say, he's had a really solid first full season. What I'll say is I don't particularly feel threatened by him in terms of he's coming to the Hawthorns with Sunderland.
I think my only thing with him is obviously he's tall. So judging by finger Stoke, Bartley might struggle against him if he's physical and that. But he can shoot from range, which is something we struggle stopping.
So just hope he doesn't get... See where he plays.
Yeah.
If he's up front, hopefully he won't get many shots from range. And also you got to think about Jack Clarke as well.
That's the main one, because he's probably second best winger in the championship to Somerville.
Ooh. That's a big shout, mate.
It is, isn't it?
Jesus. He's not up for player of the season.
Yeah, but the player of the season thing's stupid anyway.
It was Dewsbury Hall, wasn't it? Dewsbury Hall and Sammy Schmodzdicks.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Listen, I'm taking fellows. That's all I'm saying. Clearly, obviously, 35 games, 15 goals. He's died off a bit.
Yeah, he hasn't. I didn't realise how little.
Jesus.
Oh, because last season he was quite creative, so I assumed he was doing the same thing this year. But he isn't.
He's been injured, you know.
Oh, has he?
Like a month and a half. 17th of Feb to the 1st of April.
Oh.
Just come back.
Great. He's got something to prove.
I don't know if Jack Clarke always interests me, because he was at Leeds when he...
Yeah,
really. And then he went to Spurs. And he just... I don't know. I always thought he just looked crap, man. And he always looked like he had an ego about him.
Yeah.
And I never used to like him. Obviously, he never had a break until he went to Sunderland.
No.
But like, he always had that conception about, he thinks he's all that, isn't it?
He's one of them, and he's like, he isn't that fast for a winger. No. So I think that limits him a bit. But like, I think technique-wise and like actual dribbling, I think he can cause pretty much any team in the league an insane amount of problems.
Yeah, I think he's a similar dribbler to Grealish, but with more purpose in terms of being direct. Obviously, Grealish is probably the least direct dribbler.
Yeah,
in terms of getting towards goal,
I think he's probably at the moment anyway a little bit worse version of Villa Grealish when he was running at players and that.
Yeah,
but yeah. I don't think he's as good as Grealish, but like. Style wise, I do think there is a lot of similarities.
I do think there is. Obviously, it's weird because he's only got 4 assists this season, where last season he got 13.
Yeah.
I wonder what the crack is there. I don't know if it's just
different.
Sometimes it just falls to you, doesn't it? More often than not.
Different managers as well, isn't it? They don't have a striker, really.
Yeah. But he's definitely a threat.
Yeah.
That's for sure. What I would say is, obviously, he's on the left.
Yeah.
What I always like about Furlong is he's got the physicality to keep up with these players and do what he can. Obviously, can Furlong defend against Jack Clarke?
It's the cutting inside that Furlong struggles with, isn't it? Because when someone goes on the outside, he's fast enough and strong enough to like get his body in the way, but he doesn't like shift his feet fast enough when someone cuts, and Jack Clarke literally all he does is run inside and shoot.
Yes, great. See, it's weird looking at Sunderland's team and stuff, because you look at Sunderland's form, their situation and their table, and you think we should be winning that game quite easily.
Yeah.
But then you look at their team. And I mean, if you showed me that team and said, without any context, we're playing that this weekend, I'd think, oof, It's not going to be the easiest game, mate. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It's almost like the team and the form don't match up.
Yeah. So it's a weird one. Obviously, like I say, I really do think we should be coming away from this week with 6 points.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think we really should. And I think there's an element where we have to an extent. Partly just because it's that time of the season and you need to get the points in.
Yeah.
But obviously we've got a couple breathing down our necks now. Not breathing down our necks, but
sort of
a little bit too close for comfort.
Yeah, within touching distance.
Yeah, stone's throw away, mate. I really think, and I really do think as well, if we come away from these two games with 6 points, it could be wrapped up.
I think as well, because if we have a bit of a rough spell with the three draws and then come back, win two games in a row, then I think that would be like 10 unbeaten, something stupid.
Yeah.
As well, I think that sort of form carries you for the rest of the season. Like two wins in a week sort of gets you a bit of a bounce.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's like, it's always the case when a team has a bit of a lull or like a bit of a middling patch like we are, and the players, it kind of comes to a head.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then the players are thinking, we could go up or down here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they come out of it with big performances. You get these 6 points. And then it's like, yes.
Yeah.
We've come out of it. And now let's push on. Do you know what I mean? You've kind of got rid of that writer's block.
Yeah, they'll all know how big this week is, won't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that can carry us through, the fact that they clearly know what it means and what they have to do and the position they're in and stuff like that. I think there was a time when it felt like the players didn't.
Yeah.
But I think Carlos, he knows how to make them know.
We're 9 unbeaten.
Yeah. But our last 6 games is 4 draws, 2 wins in it, which really isn't.
Well, we've 1-1, 2-3-4, and drew 5 in that run.
So obviously it's always good to go 9 unbeaten, but there's just too many draws. Obviously the thing is, we should have a win against Stoke. I think Millwall is a deserved draw, and Watford we probably should have lost.
Yeah.
So on balance, we're like 1 point worse off.
Yeah.
Than maybe you'd want us to be.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's one of them, isn't it? And I think, we're 9 unbeaten. Obviously, as well, we are now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 unbeaten away.
That's always a bonus.
Obviously, when there was a time not so long ago that we couldn't buy a draw away. It was a loss every time.
Yeah, it's mad how quickly narratives change in football and attitudes change.
I think the thing is, you always want more.
Yeah.
So it's like with the away form, we now take it for granted that we don't lose away.
Yeah.
But then we start, because we're drawing, obviously our last, we got a win, a draw, a draw, a win, a draw, a draw. So 2 draws, 2 wins, 4 draws. You take that for granted. And then you think, we should win at Millwall. We should win at Stoke. We should win at QPR.
Yeah. Because it's like, we haven't just magically become really good away. Like the difference will be like, a few shots going in and that. So the difference won't be us randomly becoming a much better team. It's with the same team, we're just getting the results.
Yeah. Yeah, and we shouldn't take it for granted. That's the thing. But yeah, I feel like it's the frustration for me is those 3 draws, just on the literal sense of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the context and stuff. Obviously, like I said, we're 5 or 6 unbeaten away, 9 unbeaten in total. We're actually more We actually want, because we, yeah. We are away from home. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 unbeaten. Because we drew against Ipswich.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it's just about, like, I think it's an important week to get, like I said, about that lull, about that middling little bit. And I think we've had that a few times under Carlos, where we're a bit indifferent.
Yeah.
Well, we're not really losing, but we're not really winning.
And then it usually changes something. We go on a run.
Yeah.
We got to get out for a few games, changes something.
Yeah. Just hope it all coincides
with
the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, like I say, I think it's a big week just to get out of that kind of slump we're in.
Yeah.
And it's weird to say that because of what we said about being unbeaten and stuff. But I'd say the performances the last three games have been a bit of a slump.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's hope we come out of this with 6 points and improved performances. I think that's the main thing. I think you take 4 points and much better performances.
Yeah.
Than 6 points and still just plodding through it.
Yeah. We need something for some confidence because,
yeah,
as I said, narratives change quickly and Albion probably have like the most fickle fan base on the planet. So it'll be Carlos out if we draw against Sunderland.
Yeah. Yeah. Standard, mate.
Yeah.
Standard. We'll be all right, man. We'll be in the playoffs and we'll be at Wembley and then we'll be at, you know, the Molyneux next season and stuff like that. So it'll be all good. Right, wrap it up there, mate.
Yeah.
Clocking in 1 hour and 6 minutes. So if you've listened through all of that, fair play. But yeah, thanks for joining me, mate. It's been a good one.
Enjoy it.
Always good having a chat with you.
Yeah.
And up the baggies, and I'll speak to you next week.
I'll speak to you next week.